Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss Coaim. Last week, Pennsylvania Environmental Secretary Christopher Abruzzo and his deputy counsel Glenn Parno resigned after it was learned that they had sent and received sexually explicit emails using state-owned computers. This was after Attorney General Kathleen Kane announced that she had discovered many pornographic emails in her investigation of then Attorney General Tom Corbett's investigation into the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal. We're talking about the years between 2008 and 2012. Kane let a select number of journalists view some of the emails and has implicated several other government officials, all Republicans, including Randy Feathers, who sits on the State Board of Probation and Parole. He has refused to resign, charging that Kane, who is a Democrat, is just being political. This is an election year, after all, with Governor Corbett struggling in the polls. And further, Kane has so far refused to release the contents of emails involved court officials, despite a request by Chief Justice Ron Castile of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. Confused? Well, here to walk us through the twists and turns of this story are John Bair, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Bair Growls, can be found at philly.com. John, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty, and thanks again for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Jeremy Roebuck. He's a reporter who covers federal courts and law enforcement for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And Jeremy, nice to have you back with us as well.
Likewise. Good morning.
Good morning. John, what do we call this thing we're going to be talking about?
Well, in the current vernacular, we call it a hot mess. It just affects so many people, seems to be spreading, doesn't seem to be going away. And the irony here, Marty, is, and Jeremy knows this as well, all of this goes back to the original Sandusky case, which when it broke, I told colleagues, you know, we'll be writing about this for the rest of our days. And sure enough, we continue to. I mean, had not Kathleen Kane run for Attorney General on largely the basis of calling for a review of the Sandusky case, none of this would have happened, because all of those emails had been deleted. It was only the review of the Sandusky case that led to the recovery of those emails, and then that, of course, has led to this explosion of pornography and, you know,
all sorts of a hot mess, as you have described. To you, though, Jeremy, we're not talking about criminal activity here. We might be talking about stupid activity, but is it criminal for government officials to use computers in this kind of way? Do you know?
No. I mean, I don't think there's been any allegation that any crime occurred here. I mean, none of the porn that we're talking about is, you know, child pornography or anything that could land you in prison. And then additionally, you know, I don't even think that's the allegation that the attorney general is making. She said, at least publicly, that her reason for bringing this to light, you know, her line is that she believes it's important for the public to see how public officials, you know, conduct their business using public resources.
But at the same time, she has not released these emails, right? So the public can actually see them, for better or for worse.
Her office's release of this information has kind of been sporadic. You know, at first they denied a bunch of right-to-know requests from newspapers across the state, including ours, and I'm sure the Daily News as well, saying that she couldn't release any of it. It wasn't public information. Then about a week later, she comes back and invites a select group of reporters to say, I'm not going to show you the emails, but I'm going to show you the porn that was attached to it. And then even subsequently, she's gone on to name 8 public officials and then also release little dossiers showing, okay, well, here are some of their messages, but I'm not going to talk about anyone else that might have been involved.
John, do you want to add to that? And how do you understand Kathleen Kane's, I guess, dealing of whether or not to release these emails? Does she have, for instance, the right-to-know law? Is that on her side?
Well, it almost doesn't come into play, except for the fact that the reporters, the select reporters Jeremy referred to, were all reporters who had filed right-to-know requests. Some of them were specific, some of them were general. But Jeremy's right. I mean, her reaction to this has been sort of very choppy, initially saying she wouldn't, then she would, then she wouldn't release the email contents, then she did. And it appears now that she's reached an agreement with the Chief Justice Ron Castile from the Supreme Court, who you made reference to, that they are going to meet later this week, and it looks like she will be releasing, at least to him, emails that may involve sitting judges.
Interesting. And I do want to pick up on that. And without getting into a whole lot of detail here, but as I understand it, I'll put this back to you, John Baer, and this is based on reporters that looked at some of this material. We are talking pornography here, right?
Hardcore.
Yes.
Some of it is a little bit, you know, like more like Playboy than Hustler. Some of it is very, very hardcore. And the disturbing thing to many, and particularly female journalists who viewed some of this stuff, is a disproportionate amount of it is not just women having sex. It is the kind of pornography, and I understand all pornography is degrading to women, but this was particularly degrading to women. And that's a concern, and you may recall there was a lawsuit that ended in a settlement to a female agent that worked in that office who complained about this sort of activity, and she was paid because she had said that the office has a culture that is discriminatory and degrading to women. And so there does seem to be some evidence beyond sort of the emails that we've seen and heard about that might have been a part of that office under Governor Corbett.
And also kind of creepy, Jeremy, and you both talk about the fact that this really goes back to this investigation into the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal, is that while this investigation was going on, people were sending emails back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, the disparity is kind of jarring when you sit back and think about it. You know, I think what we've seen, the email range that she's talking about and that we've seen ranges from about 2009 to 2011. But I think the sense that both Kane and others that have spoken to us that were in on this email traffic, this was just a wider culture that extended beyond the Jerry Sandusky investigation.
Back to you, John Baer. I guess this gets into some of the weeds here, but the question is, you know, if you received it but didn't send it, does that put you in one category? If you both sent it and received it and then sent it again, does that put someone in a different category?
Well, it seems to have, at least in the case of State Police Commissioner Frank Noonan, who received over 300 emails but told the governor he never opened any or sent any, and there isn't any evidence to suggest that he did. As a result, he remains in his cabinet-level position. There, as you know and you mentioned, there have been two resignations, a third asked for, and there was actually a third resignation. One of the former deputy attorney generals at that time in the criminal division, Richard Sheets, who was working in the district attorney's office of Lancaster County, resigned yesterday, according to reports in the Lancaster paper. So we now have three resignations and one requested. That's four out of the eight. Noonan seems to be safe in his position. The other people are, two are in private practice now, and that would be Kevin Harley, the former communications director, and Chris Carazone, who was legislative liaison for Governor Corbett and had been a former deputy AG, and lastly, Pat Blessington, who was a prosecutor at that time and now works for Philadelphia DA Seth Williams.
And going back to you, John, is the governor asking for people to resign? Are they resigning, the ones who have, are they resigning of their own volition? How is the governor dealing with this?
Well, he certainly asked for the resignation of Randy Feathers, who was in the criminal division and now, as you mentioned, is a member of the Board of Probation and Parole. That gets a little ticklish because he's a Senate appointee. If he refuses to resign, as he has so far, the governor can ask the Senate to vote on his ouster, which would be a total circus, and I don't know if that's going to happen. In the case of Glenn Parno and Chris Abruzzo, it's unclear. I mean, they both tendered their resignations. We suspect that the governor asked for them, but we have no evidence of that.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I was going to say, it's worth noting, too, that Randy Feathers, the man who's refusing to resign at this point, was one of the lead investigators on the Sandusky case. So there's some hard feelings there.
Well, and there are many hard feelings as a result of Kane's investigation into that investigation. But also going back to you, Jeremy, Feathers is saying he wants an outsider to take a look at these emails. He's saying, I'm not going to resign because perhaps he hasn't seen them, or he doesn't exactly know what he's being accused of.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the feeling that we're getting from him, you know, he wants someone else to look at this, I think extends quite a bit to other people that were involved in the Sandusky investigation under Corbett that have been also sparring with Attorney General Kane over the past year. I mean, a number of the big stories that have come out of her office have stemmed from this feud between those involved in Corbett's staff on the Sandusky case who feel that, you know, who is she to come in and question the hard work that we put into this case and, you know, Kane for pursuing the investigation.
Do you think there will be an outsider, John Baer, to take a look at this, to get, I guess, an outside perspective on what we're talking about here?
Yeah, Marty, any time that there is a broad scandal in Pennsylvania, it is always a good idea to have an outsider.
Okay.
We are a politically incestuous state. I mean, you could do a 6 degrees of separation and just list these people and see a real tangle of connections and conflicts of interest. We just deserve outside help whenever we get into a mess like this.
Do you think that will happen? I understand that you think it should, but do you think it will, John?
No, because you know how we do here.
Oh. I mean, so how political do you think this is?
I think everything's political, and I appreciate the fact that I come from that perspective, but it's a perspective that has been honed over a quarter of a century. There isn't any question that Kane's initial use of the Sandusky investigation for politics ended up getting her into office. Mm-hmm. When she got there, she's been at war with Governor Corbett over a number of things, from DOMA to the lottery, and, of course, Sandusky and all of its tentacles. We're in the middle of a gubernatorial race. This comes out now. She's had these emails, you know, for most of a year. And so you've got to question. You've got to step back and question. You've got a Democratic attorney general. You've got a Republican governor who have been at war on other issues. It's hard to turn your back and say, oh, this has nothing to do with politics.
I always wonder, Jeremy, especially in the year 2014, why someone would use their work email to send, whether it's pornographic material or personal material. Haven't people learned that lesson yet? I mean, apparently they haven't, but I always just have to scratch my head when these stories bubble up.
Apparently not. I mean, it is kind of baffling, especially when we're talking about some of the level of pornography that we're talking about here. I mean, the material ranges from, you know, kind of jokey things that are inappropriate to, as John said earlier, just out-and-out hardcore porn that was being passed around. And it does leave you kind of scratching your head as to what were you thinking.
Yeah. What were they thinking, John? Do you know?
Well, I mean, and the other thing that should be noted is this was a criminal division that had built tons of cases against lawmakers and legislative aides on the basis of captured emails. I mean, this is what they did as part of their jobs. Why it did not suggest to them that this may not be a good idea, the only explanation that exists is untouchables. We're the guys that nobody can get to. We're the ones that get to everybody else. We can do whatever we want.
And that's John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Also with us, Jeremy Roebuck. He's a reporter who covers the federal courts and law enforcement for the Philadelphia Inquirer. And we asked him to join us today to take us through this the twists and turns of the scandal involving the receipt and transfer, the sending of lewd and pornographic material using state computers. Three people have already resigned. A number of people are under cloud, and a whole host of questions still remain. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We want to know what you think about the scandal. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Temple University Libraries are proud to support WHYY. This fall, Temple University Libraries present lectures exploring digital cultures. From October 14th through 16th, the series will present a residency with visiting artist Micah Cardenas. All events in Cardenas's residency are open to the public with no ticket required. A complete schedule of the Temple University Library's Digital Cultures Lecture Series is available online at library.temple.edu. That's library.temple.edu.
Greater Philadelphia Gardens support WHYY and encourage you this autumn to visit more than 30 gardens within 30 miles, right here in the Philadelphia region. Events for the whole family to experience the autumn colors of the season. Greater Philadelphia Gardens display beautiful arboreta, inviting historic landscapes, and more. A tradition of horticulture going back 300 years, Philadelphia is America's garden capital. Information at americasgardencapital.org.
The Breast Center of Doylestown Hospital is proud to support WHYY, offering personalized care plans and advanced surgical techniques, including the newest type of breast conserving surgery. The specialists of the Breast Center of Doylestown Hospital are your resource for comprehensive breast care close to home. Pink Party, a breast health event in Warrington, Pennsylvania on Monday, October 13th, will feature a health discussion, therapy demonstrations, refreshments, and more. Details at dh.org/pinkparty.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. Three officials in Governor Tom Corbett's administration have resigned, having been implicated in a scandal involving the transfer of lewd and pornographic material using state computers. The Attorney General's office named other individuals involved in the scandal, but has yet to release the contents of the allegedly pornographic emails, despite a request by Chief Justice Castile of Pennsylvania's Supreme Court. That's what we're talking about in this hour of Radio Times with John Baer, columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. You can read his blog, Baer Growls, at philly.com. And also Jeremy Roebuck. He's a reporter covering federal courts and law enforcement for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Do you think this is an important story? We want to hear from you. And that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Jeremy, let me turn to you and talk a bit about what's happening between Kathleen Kane, the Attorney General, and Ron Castile, the Chief Justice of Pennsylvania's Supreme Court. What's going on there?
Well, we should back up a little bit and say as soon as this scandal broke and names were named, Governor Corbett and the Chief Justice both requested from the Attorney General's office, well, if you're saying my people are involved in this, I want to see what you're talking about. Now, Kane's office did share some of that with Governor Corbett and then said to Castile that it would be a little bit more complicated. She couldn't do it immediately. Her reasoning was with the officials that Corbett had requested, that those were all of the people that she had already publicly named. So she'd vetted whether it was appropriate for her office to be sharing this information, so she immediately shared it. With Castile, she was saying it would take more time. They hadn't vetted those people. They would have to go through and search through all their cache of emails. Now, Castile didn't take kindly to this at all and sent her a quite blistering response last week, saying, you are an officer of the court. I expect you to comply with my request here. And as John said earlier, it seems like there's been some further talks and they're getting close to sharing some information. But a bit of a dust up there.
How did that play in Harrisburg, Don?
I mean, the problem for Kane is, as a couple of people have pointed out, is she's at war on multiple fronts. She's battling with the governor. She's battling with the Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court. She's battling with Seth Williams over the Sting case. She's battling with Frank Fina, a former prosecutor in both the Sandusky and the Sting case. And, it's tough to keep multiple fronts busy like that. So it's playing a couple of ways. One is she's got the biggest set in Pennsylvania to take on virtually every power, aspect of, in the state. And the other is she just keeps stumbling over, she's going to do this, she's not going to do that, she's going to do this, she's not going to do that. And there's some who say, look, why is this an important story? So men at work exchange pornography, that has to be fairly common. But the problem is that it creates a bad image for law enforcement and maybe the judiciary that neither of those branches of public service need, and they're all trying to deal with it now. So, I mean, it is really a complex story, and you got to leave it up to people to decide whether they think it's worth pursuing or not. I think it's worth pursuing because we don't know where it's going to lead.
Yeah, and I'm curious, because you are joining us and live and cover Harrisburg, John, about sort of how this is playing out in the legislature.
It's a much bigger story, Marty, in central Pennsylvania and in the markets between Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, because those people lived here and are known here, the people that are named. And look, state government gets much more attention in the middle part of the state geographically than it does in, say, Pittsburgh or Philly.
Does it feel that way to you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's definitely interest here as well, but it is at a bit of a remove. I think, as John said, with the folks actually being born, raised, coming out of the central part of the state, there is an attachment there for people.
And this seems to happen a lot, John, when we talk about state issues. What trickles into the Philadelphia region is often different from how it plays out in the rest of the state.
Yeah, there's no question, Marty. We have talked about that before. I've often maintained that if the capital of Pennsylvania was in Philadelphia, we'd have a different state because it gets a lot of attention here, all the doings. The good and the bad get a lot more attention in the middle of the state than they do in the major markets.
Let me see what Michael from Center City, Philadelphia has to say. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, well, I just focus on Marty's comment about how thoughtless and stupid these people must have been to use a government, let alone a work-related computer to send out these objects or things. And I think, really, apart from just being asked for their resignations, they should really be severely penalized to set an example for anyone in the future, particularly a younger population. I mean, I think if we brought Dan and Voices in the Family into this discussion, he would point out, well, we walk around thinking about sex 90% of the time. It's, you know, it's just a common thing. But Washington, D.C. is reputed to be the most active center of people using and watching pornography, and it's just like these guys are trying to play. Well, it's perfectly okay if it's like that.
But before we get too off track here, Michael, when you say penalized how? And we've had three resignations so far.
I mean, make it very difficult for them to get another job that's in the least bit responsible. It's just, I mean, flipping burgers, okay.
But you know, we're not talking about something that's, you may not like it, but it's not illegal. It might be stupid,
no,
but it's not illegal.
No, it's irresponsible. You had said, you know, it's stupid. It's just, right. just to personally hold these people up as objects. Well, these people are really stupid. They're thoughtless. They don't take the jobs responsible, the responsibility of attached to their jobs in the least bit seriously. And they should be publicly ostracized for it, at least.
Well, I mean, the question is, maybe they already have been. I don't know. Jeremy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, even the people that say this is not a story, this is not something we should be paying so much attention to, would at least acknowledge that it is an issue. Whether it's an issue that should have been aired in public is one thing. I mean, certainly the Attorney General had it within her power to, you know, deal with this, you know, the ones that are still on her staff that were part of this, you know, discipline them as, you know, you would anyone else in your office, and then pass the information to those that worked for other parts of the government mm-hmm. onto the administrators there. But regardless, I mean, I think the airing and the penalization, I mean, I think people recognize that this is an issue that should be addressed in some manner.
What do you think, John?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are people who make the case that these prosecutors were the people who built cases against leaders in the legislature of both parties who went to prison for, in many cases, theft of services, which is the misuse of government. In this case, the misuse of government facilities for something that's non-governmental. And the argument could be made, and I'm not a lawyer, but the argument has been made that, look, these guys over a couple of years, let's add up the time and the amount of energy and the resources that were spent on the exchange of pornography, and maybe that reaches the $2,000 threshold for felony theft of services. I don't think anybody's going to – well, you never know. I mean, we are litigious. Somebody might bring a case making that point that – or at least raising the legal question, was theft of services involved in an issue like this?
Well, that's an interesting way to think about it. Let me go back to you, Jeremy, because you talked about the fact that there are, as I understand it, something like 30 current employees within the Attorney General's office, Kane's office, that are in some way implicated in this scandal, but she hasn't released that information. I mean, take us through that piece of the story.
Yeah, the eight names that she has publicly released are a very small subset of the wider people that were involved in this exchange. You know, whether all of the wider breadth of people were reading these, passing them along, is a different story. But, you know, several of them still work in Kane's office. And at this point, we're still trying to figure out to some degree what, if any, action will be taken against them. You know, she said when she released the eight names that human resources and union rules kind of prevented her from naming any other people. So she won't explain what rules or anything, so we're still trying to work on that.
Yeah, and John, just she talked about union contracts, and then there, of course, in response to that, charges that she's somehow protecting these people who are working in her office. Can you shed some light on this piece of the story?
I really can't. And attorneys who work with union contracts are at a loss to explain that as well. So we're just sort of stumped, and her office is giving no explanation other than, you know, we're releasing what we're allowed to at this time.
Who does she answer to?
The people of Pennsylvania. She's an elected public official. Right. And if you buy Chief Justice Ron Castile's argument, she answers to him as an officer of the court.
You want to expand on that, Jeremy? I mean, just, you know, again, this sort of back and forth between Kane and Castile.
I mean, I think John summed up the relationship pretty well. I mean, ultimately, she's an elected official, so she has some domain. But, you know, she does have to deal with the court system here. So I imagine, you know, Castile feels pretty firm in his stance as well, and will pursue that if they meet each other at loggerheads again.
Well, and he was, you know, he was pretty critical. I mean, he just wasn't buying her argument.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I don't have the exact wording in front of me, but he said something like he found her argument that she didn't have the resources, you know, just completely unbelievable.
We have a comment from Kristen from Westchester. How does this resonate for women in terms of work culture in the offices? And John, you had mentioned the fact that there was a suit, a woman who felt that, I guess, was working in a hostile environment because of these emails.
Yeah, she had filed a federal suit for anti-discrimination. And during, as part of that suit, mentioned this kind of culture of emails and anti-women behavior in the office. And she won a settlement. She's still employed. She's a female agent, still employed by the Attorney General.
But creating a hostile environment, as we know, Jeremy, that is illegal. I mean, that is
there's certainly something that right. You can bring a civil suit and win on, for sure.
Let me get to Beth from Bethlehem to join us. Hi, Beth. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, I have a comment about the illegality of the actions and how these people have been fired, but, you know, can we pursue it further? My concern wouldn't be criminal charges, but rather reparations. These people were being paid with taxpayer money while they were watching and sending porn, and we have a right to demand, I guess, remuneration for the lost services that they were supposed to be providing when they were actually recreating with their computers. So I'm wondering if there's any way that anyone has ever gone back and said, you know, here you are wasting your time on our dime, reparations are due. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Sure, John, that's the theft of services you were just talking about.
Well, yeah, it is. But, I mean, Beth raises an interesting question. The problem is, if you think about it in the broadest possible context, if everybody who worked you know, was going to be asked to pay back any time they spent on a computer doing something other than work, all of us would be tied up in lawsuits for a long time.
Do you agree with that, Jeremy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, who we are, right?
As a lawyer representing someone that is involved in this exchange said to me recently, you know, let's go through all of your work emails. I'm sure maybe there's not porn, but I'm sure there's stuff in there that you wouldn't want being drawn out into the public. And I think that's true for everyone. But, you know, there is a bit of a difference between that and porn.
Well, indeed. And the legal issues for you as someone who covers the law, the courts, what jumps out at you in this case?
You know, certainly in her response, in Kathleen Kane's response to Chief Justice Castile, the question of how much more can she release? I mean, there are issues at play where some of the emails that we have seen that have been passed around are coming from people's personal addresses, and they may be public officials, and they may be forwarding them into, you know, government inboxes of other government employees. But suddenly that becomes really sticky into, you know, how much is private and how much is, you know, should be put out for public review. And if her office sets a wrong foot in any area, that suddenly could become even more complicated legally for her.
Let me quickly reintroduce you. That's Jeremy Roebuck. He's a reporter covering federal courts and law enforcement for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Also with us is John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. His blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. And we are talking about, as we have been describing, some of the twists and the turns of this this story, this scandal here in Pennsylvania involving members of the Attorney General's office and the Corbett administration sending and receiving pornographic and lewd material using state computers. We want to hear from you. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. To you, John Baer, we are, about a month away from the election in November, and Corbett is struggling in the polls up against Tom Wolf. Do you think this in any way is going to play out politically in the next month or so?
Probably not, although it did come up as the last question in the second debate at KYW News Radio when Larry Kane, who was moderating, posed the question, and Tom Wolf said, well, you know, it goes to the culture of an office and a system, and that goes to the people at the top. And then after the debate, Governor Corbett said that was a cheap shot, that he didn't know about this, that he would have stopped it immediately. And anybody who knows Tom Corbett knows that that's true. I have no doubt that that he didn't know. I mean, he is a devout Roman Catholic and a renowned family man. I would be stunned beyond things that I've been stunned about if we found out that he was aware of this during the time it was going on. So, and, you know, there are serious issues affecting the future of the state that are far more important than this. So we have the last debate tonight. I'd be surprised, particularly because it's in Pittsburgh and the story is it does not have the legs out there even that it has in Philly or Harrisburg. So I'd be surprised if it came up tonight or if it has any kind of lasting impact on the election.
Jeremy, if I can go back to you and even going back to the courts, and you talked about personal emails and the sort of mixing of personal work emails, which raises the name of Seamus McCaffrey. What can you say about that?
Yeah, last week the Inquirer and the Allentown Morning Call both were told the same batch of emails that were part of the larger review of what Kathleen Kane's office was looking at. And in that set, they were primarily emails that had been passed through Justice Seamus McCaffrey's personal inbox. Now, he's refused to comment and made the point, you know, since when did my personal emails become public business? But the reason I think that we have all been able to get a hold of them is because, you know, he would forward them or they were forwarded out of his inbox into government inboxes, you know, from some of the employees that are now under investigation. So you can kind of see the chain of email traffic. So suddenly his name is thrown into the mix, wow, but in a complicated way.
Anything you want to add to that, John, before we have to take our break here?
Just quickly, I mean, he is involved in this to any larger extent, or if other judges are, it does raise a problem because there's probably no other entity that has more cases before the Supreme Court than the Office of Attorney General because they represent so many variety of different legal issues. And you just don't want a friendly – I mean, if you're friendly enough with people in the office to forward pornography to them, I mean, what does that tell you about the kind of relationship that exists that should not exist? Judges should be above and apart from the people that they're going to hear cases from.
And you mentioned that Castile will be meeting with Kane, later this week?
We think maybe Friday, and we'll see if anything comes out of that and whether there are other judges involved. We are told on background that there are.
Ah, indeed. Well, let's take a short break. We'll get back to our conversation with John Baer and Jeremy Roebuck. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Penn Museum supports WHYY. A 15-ton Egyptian sphinx, a crystal ball from China's Forbidden City, a 6,500-year-old skeleton from ancient Iraq. All of this and more is on display now at the Penn Museum. The Penn Museum unearths the story of humankind through diverse programming, interactive exhibitions, and three floors of art and objects from around the world and across time. Information about Penn Museum available online at www.penn.museum.
Supporting WHYY's Simpson Meadows, a retirement community in Dallingtown, PA, in Chester County. Managed by Simpson Senior Services, a nonprofit with a long-standing tradition of care. Simpson Meadows provides personal care for senior adults, along with memory care, respite, and independent living. Special services for respite memory care are offered for a limited time for families who need support for loved ones during the upcoming holiday season. More at simpsonmeadows.org.
Doctors are committed to making sure patients stay healthy, but who takes care of the healthcare system as a whole? If you work in public health, you do, and Jefferson School of Population Health can help you to join this growing field with their Master of Public Health program. Register for an information session on October 15th at 5:30 p.m. for classes starting in January by visiting jefferson.edu/pophealthinfosession. Jefferson supports WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. We're talking about the fact that several members of the Tom Corbett administration here in Pennsylvania have resigned because they were implicated in a scandal involving sending and receiving sexually explicit and pornographic emails on state computers. This all came to light when Attorney General Kathleen Kane discovered the emails while investigating Tom Corbett's handling of the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse scandal when he was the Attorney General. Talking with John Baer, political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News, and Jeremy Roebuck, reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, who have been following the twists and turns of this story. And again, if you want to join our conversation, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We were fumbling in here looking for some of the language between Kathleen Kane and Ron Castile. And just so our listeners know, and I'm looking at you, Jeremy, Kathleen Kane, in response to Castile's request for information, said cooperation will be, you know, to the fullest extent of our abilities if deemed as permissible. And Castile's response was that her concerns were bordering on the frivolous. So some pretty prickly feelings there between the two.
Right. And I guess we'll see how it plays out later this week.
Yes, indeed. And John, you mentioned the fact that, I mean, there are other issues, and we've talked about a lot of them on Radio Times, things like the pension crisis and the school education crisis and jobs and fracking and all of that kind of thing. I mean, do you feel dirty talking about this?
Marty, I've been around so long, I can't feel dirty talking about
anything. You can't feel dirty
about anything.
Yeah. You're that old and crusty.
Right.
Well, let's see what Becky from Wayne has to say. Hi, Becky. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Thank you so much for what you do. I listen to your show all the time.
Oh, thanks.
This is the first time I've ever been moved to call, so thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm sitting here listening, and I'm offended at the lack of outrage that I'm hearing related to the treatment of women in these emails that were used, you know, on state computers, on work time. I have a question of what if this had been some other protected category against discriminated, you know, if this had been about African Americans or Jewish people. I wonder if there would be more, if people would find that more offensive. And I'm just thinking about, if your mom or daughter or sister was going in to present to her boss and he had just been looking at an email with these, you know, devotion and willingness, good employee, offensive. Yeah, I mean, I just, that's so offensive to me that I'm just shocked that people have this kind of boys will be boys.
Ah, I'm surprised that that's your takeaway from our discussion, Becky. But let me give our guests, starting with you, John Baer, a chance to respond, because I hear some outrage coming from you, John Baer, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Becky missed the earlier part of the show when I made the point that the most disturbing thing about this is not necessarily that there were sexual emails going back and forth, but that so many of them were especially degrading to women because of the focus and the content, and that has created evidently a culture in that office of testosterone-filled prosecutors that led to the settlement of a case brought by a female agent who did not want to work in that environment. Mm. And it is, look, I've had people say to me, having seen some of the emails, having seen some of the banter about the emails, I wouldn't want my daughter working in a place like that. And that's completely understandable. And there should be a level of outrage about that or any other workplace that is demeaning to women. I mean, Becky is absolutely right and is feeling correctly on this.
Yeah, Jeremy, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, and to speak to Becky's point, I mean, we've heard from women that do work in that office, some of whose names have cropped up in some of the banter that went back and forth, who are not only, you know, rightfully offended by this, but, you know, are hurt. You know, I thought these guys were my friends, and I see they're referencing me in connection to all this other stuff that was going around. So there's definitely outrage there.
Well, and that sounds like, I mean, if you're hearing that's a tip of an iceberg, that's a pretty potentially explosive issue. I mean, if you've got female employees working in an office that are saying, you know, these guys that I work with are not just looking at pornography, but associating my name with it.
Certainly. I mean, I would not be surprised at all if we saw another lawsuit like John was referencing earlier from a woman in the office or something like that, you know, said this is a hostile environment for me to work in.
Becky, yeah,
the other thing that's going on, Marty, if I can just quickly, there's a longtime a grassroots activist group called Rock the Capitol in Harrisburg that has actually opened an anonymous P.O. box. A P.O. box in Harrisburg for people who work in state government to send them examples of this kind of abuse, not only in that office but anywhere else, which they say they will then vet and then release to the press. So when I heard about this, I said, hey, you guys are going to need a bigger box.
Right. You think so?
Yeah.
Becky, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Barb from Jenkintown has to say. Barb, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Marty.
Hi,
thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm with Becky. I'm outraged about the women, but I'm actually outraged about something else regarding to this. I've been getting angrier and angrier just listening. For 20 years, I worked in a county government in Minnesota, and each year the state required us to sign a form, every county, state, city worker, to sign a form saying that if we were found guilty of misusing the government computers or using it for anything other than government business, we could be we will lose our job. We could pay up to a $5,000 fine and possibly jail time. And I kept hearing, this isn't illegal. This is just stuff that's not illegal. And why isn't it illegal in Pennsylvania? It should be.
Well, that's interesting. Let me see if Jeremy has any thoughts about that, and we'll get to John's comments as well.
And to back up, I don't know that we've said necessarily, as John raised earlier, someone could press potentially a case of theft of services here. That specter has not been raised, as far as I've heard, from anyone that's actually involved in reviewing these emails or from the Attorney General's office, at least publicly.
Right.
You know, so if it leads to that, who knows? But I think the primary impetus for the Attorney General releasing this stuff, at least as she has said, has been – I just want people to know what this office looks like behind closed – or looked like behind closed doors.
Well, and John, she's comparing Pennsylvania with another state and saying that Pennsylvania comes up short when it comes to things like this.
Well, Pennsylvania comes up short with just about everything when you compare it to other states. Minnesota is a very progressive state, as Barb knows. I'm not surprised that there is a law there. And look, maybe something comes out of this. I mean, after the Sting case, when – four lawmakers and a former traffic judge were caught on tape taking gifts and cash, there is legislation pushing through to kind of tighten that a little bit. So maybe out of this, there'll be legislation that is very specific rather than just a policy setting out, you may be liable to this, this, and this if you misuse computers and government property. But, I mean, I think it's a Pennsylvania thing more than anything else, and Barb was lucky to work in Minnesota.
Barb, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Now, this is interesting. We have an email from Anonymous. Anonymous says, I was employed by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and periodically we were required to sign a form stating that we would only use the web for official business. So this is an anonymous person. I don't know what department, but maybe this isn't such a crazy idea in Pennsylvania. Jeremy?
I mean, certainly it's not, and that wouldn't surprise me if that is the case. I mean, you know, in the private world, I'm sure several people have businesses where they sign something or have jobs where they sign something similar. It's part of a contract.
Right.
You know, does it stop you from sending a quick email to your husband or wife or something like that during the day? Not equating the two,
right.
But, you know, those Those are similar.
Well, John, apparently we're talking about the welfare department here.
Yeah. I think most agencies under the governor have the same policy. Separate agencies not under the governor's control probably have their own policies. I know in the private sector there are many companies that literally every 3 months, every 4 months, send out an email reminding people of the reasonable use of company computers and emails. Maybe one of the things that come out of this is we do have a firm, solid uniform policy for state employees, no matter where they work.
I appreciate that email. Let me see what Chris from Bala Cynwyd has to say. Hi, Chris. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you. I just wanted to. It's more of an observation, perhaps. I think Marty, you had said earlier you were kind of scratching your head. Why on earth? What would cause anyone to send stuff like this in this day and age? You know, speaking as someone well into his middle age, I can tell you that there are so many of my contemporaries who are just blatantly immature and don't seem to be able to get past it. And I don't even think it's a matter of intelligence. If you think about people who have held high office in our country, Clinton and McGreevy come to mind, who have good at their judgment, they are decision makers, and yet they have a profound weakness when it comes to sex. And I wonder if maybe this is a male thing, or maybe it's just part of human nature, but I'm not excusing any of it. But I'm just saying that people don't think, and they do what they do.
Well, yes, they do what they do, Chris. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. John, any thoughts you have in response?
Oh, sure. Throw that to me.
Well, I was looking at Jeremy, and he was hiding on the table. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I mean, Chris obviously has a good point. There are many, many people who have different levels of sexual intensity, and some of them, I mean, probably the exact same intensity that drives people like Bill Clinton, former Governor McGreevy, that's all part of the package. And he's right. I mean, Chris is right. We see it over and over again in people in power, whether they're professional athletes or entertainers or politicians.
Well, yeah, go ahead, Jeremy.
I will say, to Chris's point, a lot of the material that we have seen, it is immature. It's while it's also hardcore, it's like presented in a form of a joke, not particularly funny, but the sort of internet humor that, gets passed around. And I think that does speak to his point.
Are you one of the people that has seen this stuff?
I was not one of the group that was initially invited in, but, the Inquirer received a leak of some of those emails, and we've been able to go through some of the porn attached to some of those emails. And a lot of it is. It's like particularly graphic chain letter type stuff that you would send among your – it's stupid jokes, things that aren't really that funny and, just gets passed around even though in this case it's offensive.
Yeah. Where do you think the story goes from here? And I realize it's a fluid situation, but from your perspective, what are you watching for, Jeremy?
I'd be really interested to see, from my perspective, covering courts and law enforcement in general, where this goes with Castile's interest in the judicial system. There are a number of judges, at least on the material that we've seen, that at least received this, and then one who's been named as having sent some of it, even from his private email account. I'm curious to see what developments come out of that in the next few days.
Let me get looks like Mayor from Morgantown to join us. Hi, Mayor. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have been working in the addictions field for the last 14 and a half years, and I like to hear comments about not just firing, but getting folks into treatment and using dollars to do that. If the rudeness of the emails were as powerful as I'm hearing, chances are these folks have some sort of addiction and probably need treatment because they're probably going to do it again. Hmm. And so I'd like to hear what you all have to say about that. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Mayor. Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I guess, John, I'm tossing that back to you. I know you're not an addictions counselor, but it's an interesting thing to at least contemplate.
Well, it is an interesting issue. I mean, most of these people now are, outside of government work. I mean, I don't think all of them would be in the category of needing help. But when we finally get to the point of who originated the majority of the worst, then perhaps that person might want to seek counseling or have counseling recommended to him.
And that's one of the critical issues for you, John, which is who started it in a sense.
If we find out that there is an originator who kind of was responsible for the like I say the worst of the worst, That would be interesting. And I agree with Jeremy, the wherever this judicial stuff goes is very interesting. And third, whether the Randy Feathers case ends up in the state Senate in the few days that they have left before breaking for election.
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. And John, just picking up on that, so whatever is going to happen might happen in the next couple of days, because
it would have to, because these guys are getting out of town soon to go back and run for reelection. Half the Senate is up, and they're not going to want to hang around. Mm-hmm. So that would have to be a request from the governor. Perhaps the governor's office is still negotiating privately with Randy Feathers and the Board of Probation and Parole. We just have to wait and see.
And that was a question about whether the Senate would vote to oust him or not?
Right, because he was confirmed by the Senate after being appointed by the governor. Since he has refused to resign, the option is for the Senate to vote to ouster him.
And what else, in the minute that we have left, what else is going on in Harrisburg?
This has, as you might imagine, taken up a lot of oxygen. And beyond that, I mean, I think the Harrisburg focus is on the reelection campaigns in the House and the Senate and, of course, the governor's office.
And, of course, the governor's office. And Jeremy, as you said, you'll be watching things here and watching the courts and the legal system just to see where this story goes next. And
certainly. I mean, Chief Justice Castile is very interested in pursuing this, and I imagine if he gets his hands on anything, you know, there will be developments of some sort as it goes forwards.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. John Baer, as always, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Marty. Always a pleasure.
And always a pleasure for us as well. Political columnist for the Philadelphia Daily News. Again, his blog, Baer Growls, can be found at philly.com. Jeremy Roebuck, thank you very much for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me here.
You're welcome. He's a reporter. He covers the federal courts and law enforcement for the Philadelphia Inquirer. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of the show, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.